We're 2 months away from this thing sunsetting, and I think it's fair to say that everybody in the industry has been getting a little more nervous as the months tick off, as you turn a page on the calendar, right?
Absolutely. I think that anxiety is well-founded. You know, we're 2 months away. If you look at the congressional calendar, you know, the House is only in session 2 weeks in November. And then, although I understand that they probably will go past that period of time, you know, they've only got 2 weeks, House and Senate both scheduled in December. And again, I think they'll probably go up to the wire in trying to finish their business for the year. But, you know, we're really in a sense of urgency right now in terms of getting this thing done. I feel like we're in a good place. We have, you know, on the bill itself, we've got, almost 75% of the members in each chamber, House and Senate, signed on as co-sponsors. We've got an almost exact split between Republicans and Democrats on both sides. I mean, it's a highly bipartisan, highly popular issue, but that doesn't mean it has the legs to get across the finish line. I think, you know, we're told that if there is a vehicle, that we will almost certainly be in it. But one of the big questions right now is, will there be a, you know, a tax extender package or a vehicle to, for us to ride across the finish line in before the end of the year?
Because they can't just stick that into any piece of legislation. It has to actually be germane to taxes, right?
Well, yes. And the other challenge we face is we are part of a large universe of folks who have temporary tax provisions that need to be reauthorized. You know, so it's not just us out there saying, hey, look at us. You know, we've got this thing. It's going to really hurt if we don't get an extension. Everybody else is out there saying the same thing. And as you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. And we've got to make sure that our voice is heard between now and the end of the year.
How does impeachment and that whole debate play into all this? Because that's taken up a lot of time in Washington. And if the House votes something through by the end of the month, once the Senate takes it up, they can't do anything until it's resolved, technically, under the Senate rules. Could that really cause a problem here?
It could. That's a great question. And what we're hearing is that there is a possibility that the Senate would not take up the trial until January. You know, but again, that's, we don't really know. And I think right now we're kind of keeping our fingers crossed that if the entire impeachment process continues to go forward, that that's what happens. Because, you know, something that I think is really important to point out about this particular tax provision, many of the other provisions that are out there looking for renewal, of those entities, they have a little bit, most of them, I think, have a little bit of breathing space. You know, their tax returns may not be due until the end of the year or some other time in the year. You know, we've got a, you know, I don't know what the breakdown is, but with excise taxes, we either pay bimonthly or quarterly. And I suspect that a great number of folks are paying bimonthly. Well, you know, we can't afford to have something that is passed retroactively, because by the time that happens, we've already had to pay those taxes. And I think that there are probably quite a number of smaller and marginal distillers out there that if this is not extended, we're going to see them go away. And, you know, that's not just a, you know, that's not hyperbole. I think it really, really is the case.
In terms of that, how many do you think could go away? Are they running it that close to the edge that this makes the difference?
You know, this would be pure speculation on my part, but, you know, my observation and of the folks that I know, I think that they're probably a pretty good number that, you know, could be upwards of 20 or 30% that, you know, every time you get to a pay period, you have to think about, well, am I going to do this or am I going to do that? You know, in making those decisions, it was almost, I would say almost easier before we had the reduction because you knew what you were in for. Once we have the reduction and suddenly you can plan around that, you expect it to continue. Well, guess what? At the end of the year, if it's not, how are you going to deal with a 400% tax increase that you're going to have to start paying almost immediately?
Because you're paying it essentially January 1st, the tax bill is due for November and December, right?
Right. Well, I mean, if you've removed product before the end of the year, you know, the tax attaches on removal. So, you know, I could see a lot of people moving stuff out of bond on, you know, December the 30th. You know, and that comes with other potential issues as well. But, you know, anything removed after that would be subject to the old rate of 1350. And I think that's going to be tremendously challenging for some folks.
A lot of your colleagues put that savings from their taxes into new equipment or hiring employees or even providing better benefits for existing employees. What happens to this industry as a whole if the tax rate is allowed to return back to $13.50 per proof gallon?
Well, I think the first thing, obviously, are the marginal distilleries out there that are just barely making it. You know, they are possibly going to go away, or they're gonna have significant challenges. Some of the more stable guys may have to cut back on labor. That might mean, you know, cutting back production a little bit because of staff. It might be cutting back in the market because you can no longer afford to have that person out there making account visits. I mean, there are a lot of different, I think every distillery will be affected a little bit differently. But, you know, even some of the larger guys, you know, it's a big cut. You know, the maximum benefit on this, you know, because we're capped at 100,000 proof gallons a year, most of the so-called craft distilleries are not that big. It's a very small number. But if you kind of look at a range from, you know, the smallest to the largest and what the tax impacts are, I mean, take, you know, fairly medium-sized distillery that's doing 5,000 or 6,000 cases a year. I mean, that could mean $100,000 to them in new taxes. That's a lot of labor. That's a lot of marketing money. That's a lot of grain. That's a lot of anything to anybody. And so, you know, I feel confident that we have the support in Congress to get this done. What I don't feel so confident about is the time that we have to get it done in and the other things that are going on up there that are, you know, taking folks' attention.
Do you know if you have support from the administration for this?
You know, I don't know specifically. It really hasn't been something that that we've worked on much at that level. There have been some meetings with the White House and I think with the Vice President's office along the way, but really this is a thing that there's no reason that the administration would not support if it gets there. I think the challenge right now is just the logistics of getting it there in the amount of time that we have and, you know, everybody else that's looking for you know, some help from Congress.
Is there anything that the average consumer can do besides call their member of Congress and their senators?
Well, I mean, that would be the most important thing. I think, you know, we have support, like, broadly throughout Congress. We have support through leadership on, you know, House Ways and Means and Senate Finance. But I think, again, if I could say there's one thing that would be the most helpful, it would be leveraging your local congressional delegation to lobby House and Senate leadership, particularly the committee leadership, to get this done.
You'd think everybody in Congress would love a tax cut and want to make it permanent, but that isn't always the case, is it?
It's not. And, you know, I understand the challenge they have is they've got to fund government as well. And for every tax cut, you have to look at whether or not you're going to have to take away some other service or program or something else that they're looking to fund. I think that the numbers have borne out that at least, you know, I won't talk about beer, wine or cider because that's not my area. But if you look at the numbers specifically for distilled spirits, and I've been tracking this for a while now, the growth of the industry really has offset the reduction in total revenue to the government. And, you know, looking at the numbers, and they're subject to revision all the time, so I kind of keep up with that. I mean, honestly, we're about the same amount of revenue per year now as we were in 2017 before this went into effect. So, you know, I think we have to talk about the fact that this is not really a major impact on the federal budget. And at the same time, it's created growth in the industry, and that growth has helped local economies, local farmers, you know, vendors, suppliers. You know, it impacts tourism, it impacts payroll taxes, local, you know, sales taxes, property taxes, the whole bit. So overall, I think it's a win-win for the industry and for everybody else.